Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com. Today is Wednesday, August 10th, 2011, and this is episode 17?
16.
16. 17. I think it was 17. We just looked that up. Who's got the worst memory, me or you?
I'm running on little amounts of sleep and high amounts of caffeine, so it could be me.
Let's see, 16. No, 17. We did 17? 16 last week, 17 this week. Okay, anyway, so this is episode 17 of BadQuaker.com podcast. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
And that was kind of a goofy start, but that's kind of typical for us. We might have some background noises today. We have a cat joining us in the studio. We'll call this a studio.
Because basement sounds so much worse. And to the people in Great Britain, watch out.
Yeah, take care of yourselves over there. Things are getting ugly. Boy, I could talk a lot about that. That's really a mess that's going on over there.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's one of those things where it really emphasizes the need to always be prepared to take care of yourself. Because in situations like that, you never know when it's going to be safest just to kind of hunker down and stay at home, when it's going to be safest to leave.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be prepared for things like that.
Yeah. The easy thing to say is don't live near a city.
Yeah.
But, of course, you know, that's not practical.
No.
So, so it's always good to have a plan, and especially... if you're a person by yourself, you live by yourself, you only have to worry about yourself, that's great. You can, it's very flexible as to your options and situations like that. But if you have a family, if you have especially young children, you need to have a plan for things like this. Even if you live, you know, in some place that's not London and not on fire right now,
mm-hmm.
Because things like this can happen in any city.
Yep.
Just all it takes to spark something like this is one ugly situation that gets out of control.
Yep.
And people you would never suspect of behaving like this behave like this.
And there's this underlying everyone you speak to. Statist or non-statist,
mm-hmm.
pro-government, not pro-government, everyone you speak to has an underlying anger
mm-hmm.
at the state.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
Because unless you live in a cave and don't ever encounter the world,
yeah.
there are things that are happening in this world that will make you so angry
yeah.
that you want to go do these things.
Yeah.
And so when it just takes one situation
mm-hmm.
and suddenly that anger that is in everybody to begin with
yeah.
just boils over into really uncontrollable rage. And it's unfortunate because it's against people who are not involved, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's...
They're not going to
Parliament,
you know, Parliament
yeah.
and attacking those people. They're not
right.
attacking... legitimate government offices. They're attacking neighborhoods and people's homes
right.
and people's shops.
Yeah, and just pedestrians walking down the street.
Yeah.
It's important to understand, too, and this is, since we are anarchists,
mm-hmm.
we need to emphasize that this is not anarchy.
No.
This is not the result of anarchy, and this is not what anarchy does. The riots and stuff that are going on over there are angry people who are angry over the situation that they're in, and that's not what anarchy is.
Mm-mm.
The fundamental principle of anarchy is the zero aggression principle, and you cannot be smashing people's windows and setting cars on fire if you're obeying the zero aggression principle.
Yeah.
You cannot be respecting property rights if you're setting a car on fire. It doesn't matter. You can say, oh, well, but this is a police car. It doesn't belong to a human being. It belongs to the state. It doesn't matter. It's still property.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the right to destroy property that's not yours.
Yep.
Now, if you're going to make the argument, well, in a way, it is mine because my taxes paid for it. Ah, guess what? You're a statist.
Mm-hmm.
You are now saying that car, you're giving the state legitimacy by saying that what the state owns, you own a little bit of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's the case, then everybody else owns some of that, and you still don't have the right to destroy it.
Yep.
So fighting against the, and oh boy, how many times have I said this? Fighting against the state, using the weapons of the state, guarantees your failure. The state only knows three things. It knows aggressive violence, it knows theft, and it knows lies. And if you use any of those three against the state, you're fighting the state on its battlefield of choice with its weapon of choice, and you will lose.
And it is, what, 6,000 years old? The state has been
at least
around
maybe 9.
Yeah, since somewhere between 6,000 and 9,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
It knows those weapons better than you do.
Yeah, yeah. It's seen this game before. It's played all this through millions of times and millions of city states and millions of locations, and it knows this game. And to play the game according to the state's rules, it's guaranteed you're going to lose.
Yep.
And it's not anarchy.
Nope.
You are not helping the cause of anarchy.
Nope.
By fighting the state like that. You're harming the cause of anarchy, and you're strengthening the state.
Because people look at that, and they immediately turn to the state.
Yeah. People, the ignorant masses, think, when the state says, see, this is why we need more police, and the ignorant masses go, yeah, protect us.
Yes. I mean, they're getting their homes destroyed. They're getting their businesses set on fire and their property destroyed. And you're making the state look like the good guy.
Right.
And you're making...
You're doing exactly what the state wants you to do.
And you cannot fall for that. And so, yes, there is that anger there. And yes, you know, it can make you want to do things like this,
mm-hmm.
but you cannot give in to that. The only way that we can ever achieve success is to not turn to violence.
Right. Do not take the bait. The state constantly... I'm going to quote him again. I apologize for quoting John Lennon. But sometimes even a communist is right. John Lennon said this. He says the government will grab your beard and pull it and smack your face. And when you react, then the government knows what to do with you. But if you don't react, the government doesn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was a little confused on what the government and what the state is. His real enemy was the state. He just didn't know it.
Right.
But that's what the state does. The state will grab your beard. The state will smack your face. And when you react, the state knows exactly what to do.
Yep.
If you don't react, the state is clueless. It has no idea what to do next.
Yep.
It leaves them dumbfounded. But we were talking about preparations before we started giving the rioters the Riot Act. It's really important because these things, you know, you think of a city like Melbourne that you think, well, that's about the nicest, calmest place other than maybe, I forgot the capital of New Zealand. I'm told, I've never been to either place, but I know people who have been to both places, and I'm told that the New Zealanders are just unbelievably friendly, just to the point of where you're just jaw-dropping friendly. And, like...
Well, yeah, they live in New Zealand.
There's hobbits running around everywhere over there. It's great.
Did we discuss this on the last one? We've had this discussion before, and I can't remember if it was actually on a podcast, but the reason why Australians are so friendly is because they were criminals in England, and as their punishment, they got sent to Australia. And it's like, really? This is where you send me. Awesome.
Oh.
You sent me out of England to Australia for punishment.
So there are whole generations over there going, there are waves here. Look, up in the sky, it's the sun.
Look, it's an ocean I want to swim in.
Oh, boy. Now we're ragging on Great Britain.
I'm not ragging on Great Britain. I'm just ragging on the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, where were we going with all that? Oh, being prepared. Holy moly.
We're having a really hard time sticking on topic today.
Anyway, I started to say, even if you're in a city, a wonderful, comfortable, loving city like Melbourne, or, you know, pick any other city in the United States, a nice city. Let's see, where would that be? Reno. Reno is a nice city. Carson City is nice. It's not really a big city. It's more like a town.
Nashville?
I haven't spent much time in Nashville.
I like Nashville.
Really?
I was a big fan of Nashville.
Nice people in Nashville.
Nice people.
Even in towns like that, though, violence can erupt. Mobs can just appear out of nowhere, and violence can erupt. And you need to have situational awareness at all times, and have a plan with your family so that if things go wrong, hey, we can meet up here, or let's go this way, or this road is better than that road. And people in your family need to understand these things and need to work out the details.
And it's not, I mean, you don't have to prepare for a specific situation.
Right, right.
You don't have to have a plan in place for, you know, plan 72, there's a riot in our town.
Right.
We follow this action plan.
Like, right.
You don't need that. What you need is general ideas of what to do in case of an emergency. And you
right.
don't have to say specifically, this is a riot, or mm-hmm. this is a flood,
yeah.
or this is losing a job. You know, any of those things can happen, and they can be emergencies. And really, the action plan is kind of the same for all of them.
Yeah, exactly. I think of our, when you guys were, for any new listeners that don't know, Kai is my daughter. So that's going to explain what I'm about to say. When you guys were young and we would go someplace like to an amusement park like Kings Island or someplace like that, we had a general set of rules that everybody knew. If you get separated for whatever reason, go to this point. And we always had that point in mind.
Yep.
And it didn't matter what caused the separation. At times, once you guys got big enough, it was like, okay, everybody's going their own way at this time. Be at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Or, if anything goes wrong, go to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we could have said, well, if anything goes wrong, go find a park attendant and ask them. But, you know, that's kind of like going to the state.
Right.
So we had this independence that we can rely on each other, and we know we can rely on each other, and we don't know that we can rely on anyone else.
Right.
So for that reason, if anything happens, good, bad, separation, an emergency, get to this point. And somebody, one of us, will get to that point at some point, and we'll all get together there and figure out whatever we need to do. Now, in a town situation, you might say, okay, if for any reason you can't get home from school, if for any reason the method or the path or anything happens that you can't get from school to home, get to this point and stay there and wait for us. Having a basic plan like that can work for something like a riot.
Mm-hmm.
It can work if you're in an area that has them. It can work for an earthquake. It can work for a tornado.
Yep.
It can work for a hurricane. It can work for construction.
Yep.
It can work, you know, if you went somewhere and you start to come back and all of a sudden, you know, the path is cut off because of construction, or there's an accident, there's a big wreck. Maybe a chemical truck is turned over and you just can't go that way.
Or, you know, your 8-year-old daughter missed the bus coming home.
Yeah.
And she knows if that happens to walk the 2 blocks and wait at the library.
Yeah. You have a basic plan like that. And you can do these things with your children in a way that they fully understand it. You don't have to tell them because bad guys might come and set your car on fire.
Mm-hmm.
You can utilize the variety of things that might happen. And then you make sure that they understand that no matter what happens, if you can't do this or if you're cut off from that, then go there.
Mm-hmm.
And you break it down to a simple if then, and then it doesn't matter the circumstances.
And that's kind of key, because if you prepare for small emergencies,
right,
preparing for larger emergencies is much easier.
Or done already.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you've already planned for the possibility of road construction, then you've already planned for a truck with radioactive material crashing in the middle of the road and blocking your way to get home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's already the minor thing or the major thing is already planned.
You know, if you live in an area like here where the, you know, city water is from a well like 3 feet below the ground.
Five feet.
You know, you should probably deal with the situation of a possible water contamination.
Right.
That's not an unlikely circumstance. It's not a life-threatening circumstance, but you have a backup in place so that your life isn't inconvenienced by that fact.
Mm-hmm. We're turning into the preparation podcast here.
And then when, you know, something big happens, like a radioactive truck crashes and suddenly your water's contaminated, It's no big deal. You have options.
When the zombies arrive.
Or when you lose your job and your water's turned off.
Yeah.
You got a couple of days to figure out what you're going to do. Now that the Dow has tanked and... Not that I'm saying anybody's likely to be losing their jobs anytime soon, but it's not a good outlook.
Wow, totally different thing. I just spotted a headline that Alan Greenspan basically has said, well, what they need to do is put more money into the system. Let's see.
Because that worked so well all the other times we've done it.
If you do something and you get, if you do A and you get result B, but you wanted result C, doing A again, hoping it produces C, is not bright.
No.
When you do that over and over and over for almost 100 years now, They've done this to the U.S. dollar. When you do that same thing over and over and over for 100 years and you don't learn the lesson, you're either one of two things. You're either a complete idiot or you're doing it on purpose. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying Alan Greenspan is evil and he wants to destroy the money. He's out of power now anyway. He's just making...
But there's only two choices. You're either evil or you're an idiot.
Yeah. Putting more money into the system is not going to save solve the problem.
I said this so many times before they passed the legislation to raise the debt ceiling. You know, they would come on and they would say, well, they raised it so many times with Reagan and so many times with Clinton and so many times with Bush, and I don't see why they can't just raise it. Well, maybe they've figured out that doing the same thing doesn't fix the situation. Clearly I was wrong, but I had hope.
Well, there is a certain amount of collective stupidity in government. Oh, I just did an article on that. stupid or evil.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the old saying is, never attribute to evil what can be explained by stupid.
Right.
And that fits government so well. But the problem is that government is this blend of some of the worst people who can't get a job or keep a job in any other way. They go to work for the government because You can't be fired, You know. Not a lot is required of you. It's an easy job comparative to Shoveling coal or something like that. So they go to work for the government. They're not the top producers. If they were, they wouldn't be working for the government. So you have a certain level of stupid throughout government.
Right.
Then you have evil in government. That part is typically the difference between government and the state. But the evil that's there from the state and the evil that's there from individual people lining their own pockets forces situations where stupid happens over and over and over And over again.
Stupid interlaced with moments of sheer, amazingly intelligent evil.
Yeah.
Like, there are times when you look and you go, that is not them being stupid.
Right.
They know what they're doing with that, and they're doing it intentionally. And they're doing it because they're evil.
This is where a lot of the foil hat people end up coming to the conclusions that they come to.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can look around and you can say, this many people can't be this stupid.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be some kind of conspiracy here. And so whether there's a real conspiracy or not, you start to see one.
Mm-hmm.
Because how can they be that dumb?
Yeah.
How can these things all take place like this? How could it be that the very day that the Twin Towers are attacked, We had a stand down on all the military from air protection that would have kept those planes from doing that. How did that happen?
Right.
You know, and so you start to see these things, and I don't know if that's conspiracy or not, but when you start to see them, your mind leaps to it, and you think, well, they can't be that stupid.
Yep.
It had to have been a plan.
It's the same issue, you know, when we, I think we've discussed this before in the podcast, when you look at stars.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, your mind, because the human mind is fanatical about making patterns.
Right.
And so when you look up at the stars, you have to see a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody has pointed out, oh, see, these stars make up Ursa Major,
mm-hmm.
then when you see that, that's the only thing you can see.
Right.
You don't see any stars around that. You just look at that and you see, oh, that's Ursa Major.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, the summer triangle is like that. Mm-hmm. I walk outside and it's bright enough that you can see it even when there's city lights.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, according to what city you're in, New
right.
York City, there's things called stars, folks. Did you know that in New York City? but in a place like this, mm-hmm. Even with all the background light, you can walk into the backyard and see the summer triangle, and just as clear as day. And yet, it's not a triangle.
No.
It's just three stars.
Yeah.
You make it a triangle when you see it. Well, that's what you're saying about conspiracy theories,
mm-hmm.
is that you have a blank slate of stars there, and they're all randomly placed,
yep.
and you look up at them, and you see patterns.
Yep.
And if someone points out the patterns to you, and you can fully grasp where they're at, it's almost impossible to look up and see the stars and not see the pattern.
Yep. And... It's an issue where it's because the human mind is incapable of looking at things without seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It tries so hard to make sense of things.
Right. Because even if you think about it, let's take a picture of Mona. Let's take the portrait of Mona Lisa. In a way, you look at this and you see this lovely lady,
mm-hmm.
A wonderful piece of art that was, you know, but that's not really. In any way, it doesn't resemble a human.
No.
There's no dimensional aspects to it. It's just a flat sheet of material with blotches of paint on it.
This is why you can show a picture of a cat to a cat, and they won't react to it.
Exactly.
Because it doesn't look like a cat.
But you can take a child, a little baby, and take a pie plate or a paper plate and draw a couple eyes and a smiley face on it and show it to them, and they will immediately recognize it as a face.
Yep.
And there are even studies that have done this, where they have taken babies and they've taken a random shape with some random spots on it, and a round shape with eyes, nose, and a mouth. It's, you know, just like an L shape for
mm-hmm.
a nose and a smiley for a mouth,
mm-hmm.
and a couple circles for eyes, and the child recognizes that and looks at it and spends more time looking at that than the random shapes.
Mm-hmm.
Because the child immediately recognizes that even though this paper plate with circles, an L, and an arc drawn on it, it doesn't resemble a human face in any way.
Nope.
And yet that child recognizes that it's a face.
Yep.
And that's what we tend to do with seeing the stupidity in government and then these little blotches of evil that we spot, and we say, there has to be something behind that. And our mind demands that there be a
yep.
conspiracy. And there might be a conspiracy. That doesn't mean there's no conspiracy.
Right.
Because the pie plate actually looks like a face.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. But here's the thing. I have to believe that if the state were intelligent enough to have a conspiracy, it wouldn't be the conspiracy that you can figure out
mm-hmm.
sitting at home on the internet.
I do believe, though, that individuals within or outside of the state can and have put together conspiracies of different kinds to try to do
oh,
one thing or another. A lot of that's documented. Was it called Northwoods Project or something like that? Oh, I should have had a note made, but I didn't know I was going to mention it. There was an actual plan that was presented to several presidents who rejected it to commit acts of terrorism within the United States to try to blame them on Cuba, to try to bait the citizens of the United States into demanding a war with Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
This was presented in the 60s. So this was actually a conspiracy that people literally thought about, decided it was a good idea, and brought it to multiple presidents to try to get them to use it as an excuse to attack Cuba. Mm-hmm. So, and we know that exists because of the Freedom of Information Act. All the documentation is there.
Right.
So you see things like that, and you say, human beings, well, is that stupid or evil or a blend?
Right.
Well, yeah. That's exactly what it is. It's all of the above.
Yep.
But it was also an evil conspiracy that they thought they were doing. There were people that thought that was a good idea, mm-hmm. to go and randomly attack Americans and blame it on Cuba as an excuse to kill, to go and fight Cuba. They thought that was a good idea. So you see things like that and you think, man, there are some seriously twisted people yep. in the government.
Yep. And you know, that is by far not the only case
no.
that they have done. You know, they have shown time and time again that they are willing to completely disregard the health and safety of the population
yeah.
To further a political agenda. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to start going, okay, well, if that's what they're telling us, if that's what they're admitting to,
yeah, then what's real?
What are they hiding?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if that's the kind of stuff that they are so unconcerned with that they're like, yeah, I'll let the public see that. Like, what are they hiding? What don't we know?
Right.
Because Freedom of Information Act or no, there's stuff you're not going to get from the government.
Right.
Especially anything that's considered ongoing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
That's pretty scary if you think about it. Well, so now we've covered being a prepper, and we've covered riots in London and in other cities. Now we're covering conspiracy theories, and we weren't going to cover any of those things.
True.
Words.
I wanted to talk about words. I came into this wanting to talk about words.
Now, we got in trouble last week for your rants, so...
We did, and I'm going to insult more people this week, probably similar people, but I promise next week I'll try to attack people on the right. I promise. I like words. I enjoy words. I have been a person who read since I was very young. I think words are important. Words have meaning. And so...
What do you mean by that?
What sparked all of this is I was looking at spirulina powder, which is a blue-green algae.
Mm-hmm.
And because I drink smoothies because
mm-hmm.
I don't
and,
like
and you try to eat healthy.
But vegetables are really good for you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can sort of blend them up with fruit and then you don't have to taste that you're eating vegetables, it really works awesome. So, you know, you try to eat healthy. And mm-hmm. I've read a lot of really cool things about spirulina.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be really healthy. It's supposed to be a complete protein. It's not as good of a protein as meat or animal products. But it is a complete protein. It's a complete amino acid. It's also had some promising studies as far as anti-inflammatory and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really interesting product. However, I keep running into vegan websites who say... and I didn't put any adjective before vegan. Very nice. Who say that it's the only source of a complete protein found in plants.
And it's not a plant.
It's not a plant. It's a bacteria. And people say, okay, well, you're being picky. It doesn't matter. It does matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because words have meanings.
Yeah.
And a plant is a specific scientific
mm-hmm.
thing. It's
right.
a specific criteria.
Just like an animal is a thing.
Right.
And there's more in existence than plants, animals, and rocks.
Yeah. You know, we're not the ancient Greeks.
Uh-huh.
We can understand that there are gray areas here.
Earth, wind, and fire, and
yeah.
what's the other? I can't remember.
I
only remember Earth, wind, and fire because of the band. Hey, it's not my fault. I was in the 60s.
Yes, but do you remember any of it?
I actually do. There are big chunks of the 70s that are somehow missing, but most of those are due to head injuries. So these words do matter. And
yes.
When, and specifically, for a vegan, it should matter. Because,
yes.
Because the vegan is very specifically saying, I don't eat animals.
Right.
Okay.
And when you say to a vegan, blue-green algae is not a plant.
Right.
They immediately go, you're calling it an animal, you're saying I'm not a vegan. That's not what I said.
Yeah, it's not an animal
it's,
either.
It's not an animal. It's not a plant. It's not an animal. It's not a fungi. It's a bacteria. It has its own kingdom. Depending on who you talk to, there's some issues regarding its specific classification.
But
it's
not
either
a plant.
One kingdom or two kingdoms, but it's definitely not in the plant kingdom.
Not a plant, not an animal.
And it's like mushrooms. Mushrooms are not a plant.
Right.
Mushrooms are fungi.
Right.
They have their own specific category. And it's more than just nitpicking so that you can pick fights with vegans. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
It's this general disregard for naming things what they really are.
Right.
And naming things have very specific power.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same exact power that a statist has when they name a violent terrorist an anarchist.
Mm-hmm.
By naming something incorrectly, you're classifying it as something that it's not.
Yeah, you're not only perpetuating untruth.
Mm-hmm.
You're degrading not only the language itself and our ability to communicate, but you're degrading the knowledge in general of what things are and how things function.
Mm-hmm. And you know, as anarchists and as people who are fighting against the state, one of our main weapons mm-hmm. is truth.
Exactly.
And truth needs to come about not in just saying, okay, well, we need to look at the Freedom of Information Act and see what the state is doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond that.
Right.
It's everyday truths mm-hmm. that get washed out by ignorance.
Right.
And you need to constantly, in your life, in your beliefs, in your political beliefs, in your spiritual beliefs, you need to constantly be saying, is this the truth?
Yeah.
And if you can't do that, if you can't objectively look at what it is that you think and what it is that you say and what it is that you believe...
Mm-hmm.
If you can't look at that and say, is this truth?
Right.
Then you will be fed whatever anybody else wants to feed you.
Yeah, you set yourself up to believe lies.
Yeah.
And myths and things that are just not right. This goes back to what we were talking about earlier today about allowing children to learn how to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Because the school systems, as we generally know them in Western culture, don't teach a child how to learn.
No.
They teach a child how to memorize some things temporarily, and then those things don't matter anymore.
Yep.
So whether you keep them in your mind or not, doesn't really matter.
Right.
As long as you can pass the test, get through the class.
Right, because if we test you again next year, we'll go over it for 6 weeks before we test you.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to actually remember anything. We'll review everything every single year.
Yep.
So our the school systems in the Western culture actually teach children not to learn.
They teach children to accept something as fact,
mm-hmm.
recite it back,
yeah.
and then forget it.
Yeah, and then move on.
And not objectively look at that and say, is this actually truth?
So taking the child, and now we'll probably get some flack for this too, taking a child and shoving them into a school, whether it's state-operated or private,
mm-hmm.
or even a homeschooler who goes by a state-authorized or mm-hmm. state-approved, what's it called?
Oh, curriculum.
Curriculum, yeah, thank you. To take a child, even a homeschool child, and run them through that same process,
mm-hmm.
it's almost as bad as just sending them off to a state school
yep.
and letting them brainwash them. It's critical for a young child to learn how to learn.
Yeah.
And you can lead them to that, but you can't, you know, the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Well, that's how it is with a child. You can lead a child to learn how to learn, But sitting down and forcing them to memorize things is not the process to do that.
No, and what happens is you have children who are naturally inclined to learn things.
Right.
And they will learn despite of you.
Yeah.
Despite what you do, they will learn.
Mm-hmm.
And they will go on to be whatever profession they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have other children who are not naturally inclined to be that inquisitive in the world of academics.
Right.
And by forcing them to sit through 13 plus years of school,
mm-hmm.
you're wasting all of this time that they could be learning
mm-hmm.
a specific job.
Yeah. Or a talent of some kind.
You know, because you take these children and you give them little bits of each subject,
mm-hmm.
but you never let them actually get absorbed into it.
Right.
Just about the time it starts to get interesting, you move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So they don't know what they like. They come out of 13 years of schooling, and all they know is they hate school.
Right.
They don't know if they like math. They don't like know if they like science. They don't know if they like literature. They don't know if they like art. They don't know. All they know is they hate school.
They've been given a glimpse of a few things, and sometimes a child will catch enough of a glimpse of one particular field that mm-hmm. that they have an interest in it, and they stick with that. But for the mass majority, the vast majority of those kids, it's all just, you know, drudgery. It's just, mm-hmm. they have to just...
It's just busy work.
Yeah, it's just to keep them busy. It's babysitting. That's what schools are.
Yep.
Schools are babysitting factories so that parents don't have to deal with their own children.
Yep.
And that's really harsh. And people, you know, I've said that to people and they've gotten really mad. I've said that to relatives.
Mm-hmm.
And they have just been furious with me. And sometimes cut me off from being... I'm not a stranger to having relatives who won't speak to me.
I find that the more angry a person gets when you start speaking about something,
mm-hmm.
the closer you are getting to truth.
Yeah. Oftentimes.
Because...
You're hitting something that's near a nerve for them,
mm-hmm.
and they recognize it, even if they don't fully understand it. Taking us back to your topic of words... I just want to throw this out. This is not a whole thing.
I'm sure we could make it a whole thing.
We probably could. TV advertising, on the advertisers on the television, maybe it's just me, but they use such nonsensical phrases sometimes. There's a current commercial that's on one of the networks that shows up pretty frequently, where there are two ladies and they're having lunch and they have this lousy microwave meal that they're eating. And the tagline, or one line, it's not the main line of the show, but one of the lines is, farm-picked broccoli is in this magical microwavable meal. Farm-picked broccoli. Now, what is farm-picked broccoli?
As opposed to... what? Petri dish broccoli?
It's crazy. And here's one. If Hannah were here, Hannah's my other daughter, Kai's sister. If Hannah were here, she'd go off on this one because this is her pet thing. New and improved.
Oh, I hate that.
How can something be new and improved? If it's new, it wasn't here before. So how can you improve it?
Improve on it.
If it's improved, it's not new. You already had it.
Yeah.
So the phrase itself... is self-contradictory.
Yep.
It's an ox and a moron. I want to touch one more thing while it's on my mind. One of our listeners pointed out some activity to me, and there's a lot for me still to learn about this, so I'm not any kind of an expert on the topic. But there's a woman, her name is Madeline Pickens. She is the wife of T. Boone Pickens, oil billionaire. Now, I don't have anything against a person for being a billionaire. I don't have anything against a person for making money. I don't have anything against Madeline Pickens for making the fortune she made before she married T. Boone Pickens. I kind of have something against T. Boone Pickens in the sense that whenever he wants something, he bends the state and bends the government to get what he wants. That's, to me, that's dishonest. It's like, well, he's a thief, but he's not brave enough to pick up a gun and walk into a liquor store. Mm-hmm. And instead, what he's willing to do is take cash out of his pocket, shove it into the pocket of a politician, who then hires a guy to take the gun and come and rob me. Because mm-hmm. T. Boone Pickens is too much of a coward to show up at my house and attempt to rob me himself. Right. So he'll go get the state to do it for him. That's my opinion of people like T. Boone Pickens. And his wife is doing something even worse. She's not only lining her own pockets, like T. Boone is, with money that's stolen from taxpayers. She is attempting to use taxpayer money on her little pet project with horses. Mm-hmm. Now, like I said, I don't know this topic thoroughly in and out, but I know this. She owns a fairly large ranch in northern Nevada, in northeastern Nevada. But because of the goofy property laws having to do with Bureau of Land Management land, because she owns this one spot of property, she has certain grazing rights to a huge amount of quote-unquote government land.
Right. Which there wouldn't be government land in an anarchical state.
No, the government has no right to own land. There's nothing. As a matter of fact, I did an article on this. It wasn't really on this, but it was on homesteading, and it mentioned how prior to the Lewis and Clark time frame, prior to the Louisiana Purchase, the idea that the state, the government, could own property, it hadn't really been thought out, mm-hmm. but it didn't exist.
Right.
That thought didn't exist. Now, the King of Spain could own property,
right.
and the King of England could own property.
But it wasn't a government owning it. It was a dude.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. But when the United States formed, we formed without a sovereign, without a head like that, without a king. So when the Louisiana Purchase took place, for the first time, a non-human entity now owns property. Mm-hmm. And this set the precedent for the state all around the world in all of its different locations to then start to own property without a human being involved. That's horrific. Mm-hmm. That's horrible. Not only that, it's entirely unjust. It has no basis in true property rights.
Yep.
So, now we take this to Madeline Pickens. So she's using the muscle of the state, funds stolen from the rest of us, to set up her horse rescue thing. She wants government money to pay for a horse hospital and for horse grazing area and for all the water rights involved. Now, that's a big thing in northern Nevada.
Yeah, and I want to point out that there's this phrase, government money, but the government doesn't actually...
Oh, hold on, the word Nazi's going to attack me.
The government doesn't have any income.
Right.
It doesn't produce anything. It doesn't legitimately have any way to get capital.
Yeah.
The only way it has money is...
stealing it.
Theft.
Right.
From people like you and me and our neighbors. And so when somebody says, we're using government money to do this,
right.
what they mean is, we're using your stolen money
right.
to do this.
The government can print money, mm-hmm. but when they print money, what they're actually doing is stealing the value of the money you have mm-hmm. away from you and into the government's pockets.
Yep.
So no matter how the government gets the money, whether it's through credit expansion, printing money, or outright theft, tax, mm-hmm. it's still, the value of that money is still coming out of the pockets of the actual productive class who work and do things for a living.
Right.
So either way, it's stolen. And so what Madeline Pickens is doing, now, okay, let's back this horse up a little bit. Okay, I don't eat horse meat.
Right.
I don't plan on eating horse meat.
Right.
I hope I live my whole life and never eat horse meat, okay? In addition to that, I don't even like the idea of my dog eating horse meat.
Right.
However, if there's a person who owns a horse and who wants to eat that horse, that is not my business.
Yep.
Now, I can say, for me, personally, I'm morally repulsed by the idea of a beautiful animal like a horse being killed and eaten. Mm-hmm. I'm repulsed by that.
And as an individual and as a community of individuals, you can say, we're not going to do business with
sure.
people
who kill and eat horses.
Horses.
Sure.
Or you can say, you know, I'm not going to allow you to function in our community mm-hmm. if you do that.
Right.
But to steal money from other people,
mm-hmm.
well, to have somebody else steal money
yeah, because they're cowards and they won't steal it themselves.
To enforce your morals mm-hmm. on other people.
Right.
That's...
That is evil.
Yeah.
It's what evil is. It's when Mr. Do-Goody, Mr. Do-Gooder, Mr. Do-Gooder over here decides that his morals should be inflicted upon everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
That's what evil is.
Yep.
That's taking that fruit off the tree. That's Adam taking that fruit off the tree and biting it in defiance of God and saying, your laws don't matter. My laws are the ones that are important.
Yep.
Now, that's a little bit theology there. I'm sorry, folks, but in my theology, in bad Quaker theology, that's the fact, Jack. Taking that apple off the tree, or taking that fruit off the tree, I should say, taking that fruit off the tree in direct violation of your orders and making up your own law is what sin is. It's what evil is.
Yep.
And when one person takes the authority of the state, which is just the force of all the people with the guns, when they take that authority and they make their own laws and they inflict them on other people, that's what evil is. And yep. when Madeline Pickens uses tax money from other people to tell people what they can do and can't do with their property, that's what evil is.
Mm-hmm.
And she might think she's doing a good thing. Oh, I'm saving the horses. You know, no, you're a thief. Mm-hmm. You're stealing. They used to hang people for that.
Yep. And it does not matter if you're morally correct.
Exactly.
If it's actually a legitimate cause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may be wanting to save puppies and send rainbows and feed hungry children, but if you're doing it through theft and aggression, you are immoral and you are behaving immorally.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
If those are the tools that you're using, you are behaving immorally.
Now, I'll be the first to say that I love the wild Mustangs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, like we've talked about before on other podcasts, we have camped right out among them and had them walking through our camp. And the beauty of the American Mustang is and what it represents, you know.
Yeah. And it is, I mean, it's an amazing animal.
Yeah. And it's adapted. I read one stupid thing. The person says, well, the evidently the BLM, that's the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM designates a difference between some horses in one valley who are running wild and who have no owner, and horses in another valley that are running wild and have no owner, and all the property there has no owner in both the valleys, and the horses in this valley, Valley A, are brown, and there's some gray ones, and there's some white ones, and there's some spotted ones. And in Valley B, there's some brown ones, and some gray ones, and some spotted ones, and some white ones. And these two herds of horses in these two different valleys are treated differently because the BLM says, well, these were probably owned by somebody not long ago, and these others are wild Mustangs. Well, guess what? Every horse in North America comes from a horse that was owned. There are no native horses in North America. There haven't been for thousands and thousands of years since there was a horse. I believe, I could be wrong on this, but I believe the last native horse in North America had a cloven foot. It wasn't even what we recognize as a modern horse.
It was more like a deer?
Well, it had a foot kind of, kind of deer-like. But it was more horse-like in body. But it had a split hoof, but so there are no native North American horses.
Right.
All horses in North America were imported here from someplace else.
Right.
So to look at the horses in one valley and give them one designation, and then the horses in another valley and give them a different designation, is just government fiddle faddle. It's nonsensical. It has nothing of substance to it. Then to say, okay, well, this horse here, and this is the weird part, this horse here that we've designated from this valley, we can round it up and send it to Canada to be made into meat, mm-hmm. To be sold, and the horse from this valley can't. It's protected.
Well,
this is all goofy.
This goes back to the issue of naming things.
Yeah.
Because when you, and it's homesteading,
mm-hmm.
when you go out to something and you name it and you count it and you take stock of it,
yeah.
you own it. And when the government goes out and it counts the horses and it names the horses and it designates classes of horses, it owns the horses.
Mm. Well, it's trying to. Come on, Baggy. Come on. Come on. No. Squeaky chair. Of course, the government has no actual right to own anything. We already covered that.
Right. But that is what it is attempting to do. It mm-hmm. is attempting to establish dominance over those beings.
Yeah.
And say, this is our property.
And as far as the horses roaming on the West, I mean, this goes right to the Magna Carta. Mm-hmm. So this is not something new. We've been dealing with the state on this issue for a really long time.
Yeah. And you know, when... And you say, oh, well, the government's not trying to own it. You know, they're just trying to classify it. Mm-hmm. Well,
manage it.
Yeah, manage it. Well, when you, as an individual horse farm owner,
mm-hmm.
Decide, oh, hey, look, those are horses out there on the other side of my fence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll just bring them into my fence and then they'll be my horses. Well, if you have to get the government's permission to do that,
mm-hmm.
or if you have to pay a fee to get a license to do that,
mm-hmm.
or... if you can't do that because that's a specific type of horse that the government designates,
mm-hmm.
then those horses are the government's.
Which is immoral.
Yeah.
Because we've already determined that the government cannot own property.
Yeah.
So the horses are property, and we know the horses are property. Now comes the economics class. We know the horses are property because there is a finite supply of them, mm-hmm. and there is a demand of them. And they take up physical space. It's not like an idea. An idea can't be property because it doesn't take up physical space. Plus, you can share it in unlimited quantities, so an idea is not property. But a horse is property.
Right.
There's unowned property and there's owned property. So a horse is either owned property or it's unowned property. The state, the government, has no right to own any property. Therefore, the state has no right to own a horse. Therefore, the state has no right to make a statement what can and can't be done with a horse.
Mm-hmm. And
if I own a horse and I want to eat it, that's none of the state's business.
Yep.
That may be repulsive, that may be sickening, that may be immoral, but it's still none of the state's business.
Yeah. And you're not hurting anybody when you do that.
When I eat my own horse. It's my horse.
You know, you're not going over to your neighbors and forcing them to eat your horse.
And I'll take this position just so that any vegans that are listening, we're not going to be too upset. If the horse wants to eat me, that's still none of the state's business. That's between me and the horse. If the horse wants to eat me, he has the, as a horse... Well, actually, let's change this around to a bear. Because I really don't want to eat a bear either. But...
I've heard they're not very good.
If I own a bear, if it's my property, and I want to eat it, then I have the right to eat that bear. Mm-hmm. And if that bear wants to eat me, that bear has the right to eat me.
Yep.
It's every bit within his nature to eat me.
Mm-hmm.
And if he takes a big bite of me, I might try to struggle and get away. I might defend myself. I might fight back. I might, you know, I have all these options. But one option is not to depend on the state.
Yeah.
Because it's none of the state's business what that bear does with his property.
Yep.
And once the bear is gnawing on me, I'm his property.
Yeah.
Now, from my property rights point of view, when he's biting the chunk out of my arm, he's taking my property so I can defend myself. But either way, this is all...
You know, I'm pretty sure that a a polar bear homesteads pretty much wherever he's at.
Yeah, yeah, they have.
I'm pretty sure he owns whatever property he's currently standing on at the moment.
I believe in animal rights. I did an article on this. A polar bear has rights, but a polar bear has no human rights. A polar bear has polar bear rights. Humans have human rights. So then, if I own property and I do the things that I do with my property and I'm left alone by the government and I do these things, that's all within the realm of human rights and human property rights. When a bear eats a seal, he's not violating the seal's property rights.
Right.
He's not murdering the seal. He is functioning within his realm of legal activity.
Yep.
He is obeying the laws of beardom.
But when the polar bear goes into the territory of another polar bear and attacks the polar bear's cubs,
then he should expect to...
Then he needs retaliation from the other polar bears.
Right.
And he will get it.
Yeah.
And because that's polar bear property rights.
Yeah. And each animal has its own rights that are unique to it. Mm-hmm. And when we try to take human rights and enforce them on other animals, it's entirely nonsensical. Mm-hmm. If you just think it through a little bit, go in your backyard and watch the squirrels and watch the birds. Each one of those has unique and individual activities that is acceptable to them and that is not acceptable to them. And they stay within those realms of those activities. Mm-hmm. So when the cat attacks the bird, the cat is not violating the bird's rights.
Right.
The cat is acting purely according to what it was designed to do.
And when you're hiking through the mountains and you stumble onto a mountain lion's territory,
you're violating his property rights.
Yeah. You need to expect to get your head torn off because...
Well, they don't have mountain lions in Australia, so our Australian and our German visitors, our listeners, don't have to worry about mountain lions. We have...
Back away slowly while saying, I understand your property rights, Mr. Mountain Lion. I do not intend on trespassing.
Okay, well, that's about all we have time for today. We filled our hour. Hope we haven't upset too many people. I hope we're entertaining. That's what I hope. You don't necessarily have to agree with everything we say and all the nonsense we spout, but at least I hope we're entertaining for you. It should be fun to watch a couple anarchists bouncing things back and forth against each other, because you know if it's not fun, what's the use?
Exactly.
Folks, thanks. Oh, I wanted to mention our email addresses again. If you're in one of those, if you're in a foreign country listening to us, drop me an email and let me know, because we don't have a lot of connection with you folks over there. Drop me an email. My email address is ben@badquaker.com. Kai is Kai, K-I, at badquaker.com. If you have any comments about the website itself, you can send those to the admin. That's badquaker@badquaker.com. And, once again, this is Ben.
And I'm Kai.
Okay, now we're going to ring out here with some music from Grenades, and they're going to finish off as we check out of the program today. And I wanted to mention that music you heard in the beginning was Grenades. That's an upcoming band that everybody's going to know about sooner or later. Maybe. We hope.
We hope so.
All right. Thanks a lot, folks. Goodbye.